This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
I'm Jessie. I'm 34. I started with trichotillomania, the hair pulling, when I was 12. And I really think mine is to do with my menstrual cycle when I first started that when I was 12. And hormones is definitely, it has an impact on when I do that.
That's so interesting. I've heard of people mentioning that before, where based on when they're getting their period, that time of the month that they're pulling increases. And I've started to kind of pay attention to my own, and I'm finding definitely a correlation between the amount of feeling on my eyelids or on my scalp, you know, that intensifies during that time period. I do find myself pulling a lot more.
Yeah, so I've only ever done it on my scalp before, but there's definitely a correlation between starting my period when I was 12 and then hair pulling. That's really the only thing I can sort of relate back and pinpoint when it started. And like you say, you pay attention to it more, definitely like with hormones. I think sugar's a lot for me. I'm also going through a referral for ADHD, and I've researched a bit about that. With hair pulling and ADHD, I definitely think it's got something to do with that, maybe how my brain works. Yeah, but I'm really sort of trying to delve into it a bit more now, just to understand it more, really.
When was the first time you learned the name for the disorder?
Well, I was 12, and this was 2002, 2003. And, you know, I was young. I didn't really understand it. I hid it from my parents. As you can, when you first start pulling, it's just a few patches here and there. You can tie your hair up, hide it. But of course, it gets to a point, I think maybe a year later, where there's no hiding it. And of course, you know, my mum's going to ask me questions about it. But I don't really remember a point where I knew what it was. I think my mum probably looked into it more. I know she took me to the doctor. They had no clue. I mean, I'm in the UK. I think we're a lot less clued up than you are in America. So I don't remember a pinpoint when I knew the name for it. It was just very, we don't know what this is. She's hair pulling. And yeah, I just think over the years, I've probably Googled it. I want to say in my teens, maybe 15 myself. When I was like, okay, this isn't going away. Let me have a Google. So probably a few years after I started, I would say, I think.
And so when your parents first noticed, was it something that they noticed and asked you about it first? Or did you come and like tell them like, hey, I'm doing this and I can't really help it?
I don't remember ever going to them. I think my mum probably more so noticed patches or shorter hair. And then I don't remember actually telling her, but obviously I do remember in my childhood her knowing that's what it was. And she straight away took me to the doctor. Yeah. And then they were questioning, you know, is it depression? Is it self-harm? And then my mum did look into it and realised that it wasn't that. But again, just didn't really tell me much about it. And it was just one of those things that, you know, people I think thought maybe I might outgrow. And then obviously didn't. And then I started wearing wigs when I was 19. So then I guess it was less noticeable because you can't see my patches. And then it just didn't really get spoken about.
Yeah, I kind of had a similar experience where it was like, we don't know what's going on. Let's ask the professionals. They also don't know. So it's like, is this just a weird thing that I have? Like, what's kind of going on here? I'm not really understanding.
Yeah. And then you, like, I think I just shut it out, really. You know, it was something I just dealt with on my own. I would lie to my mum as well, about if I was still doing it. No, don't do it anymore. That sort of thing. She took me to Lucinda Ellery. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's got hairdresser places in America. I think there's one in LA, but she started like an interlace system salon in London. And I remember being on holiday, I was 14, 15, and my mum just opened this magazine on the reception table, and there was a little article from her about hair pulling. And mum was like, oh, a light bulb moment. It is, there are people that do it. That was the first time she'd maybe really heard about someone else experiencing it. And then it wasn't till I was, I want to say, 19, we visited the Lucinda Ellery salon. And I think she opened the salon because her friend was going through the same thing. And she was doing interlace systems. But yeah, in terms of professionals with doctors and things like that, they have no clue. And I've researched a lot online, and it's a lot of, like Instagram and things like that. They're all from America. No one ever really in the UK seems to talk about it. I mean, now I've gone on TikTok and obviously posted my own videos, I've looked more, and there are people in the UK, but it is predominantly people in America seem more clued up about it. And just things like that in general, I find.
Yeah, so tell me about your experience with the interlace system. Like, how did it go? How did you decide what to get and things like that?
Well, I was 19. We went there and she put me in touch with the place that does wigs. So I first did wigs, bearing in mind, well, when was, 2009? That's what, 13 years ago now. The interlace system, I don't know how much it cost, but it was expensive, and it was on my parents to pay for it. And I said, no, look, I don't think I'm ready for it. I'm going to try the wigs. So I did that. And then I think it was 2017. So I said to mum, and bearing in mind, I've had, married and two children by this point. I said, I want to try the interlace system. And it was like at least £2,000 just to get this mesh on your head. And they sold it as, you're going to get this interlace system and you're going to have a coach and they're going to help you. So at this point, we're thinking, right, this is really worth it. This is going to help me stop. At this point, I was very in denial about how it's very hard to stop, and you're living with this forever. I mean, obviously, I know there are people that don't, but I was like, yeah, great, let's do it. But I don't know about you, but if I'm going to get to my hair, I'm getting to my hair. And I was able to undo the mesh quite easily. And also, I found it actually was making a traction, it was actually pulling on my hair. So it was making me want to touch my hair. So actually, I stopped it and went back to wigs because I touched my hair less with wigs on than I did with the interlace. And they were selling it to me as a barrier to hair pulling. And also, I like to wash my natural hair and put oils on it weekly and things like that. You can't do that if you've got the interlace. And I just thought, we're spending so much money because you have to go for top-ups. You have to keep going back. And of course, it's, hundreds up to £1,000 each time. And I just said, this is not worth the money. So I stopped it. But I do still really do thank them for helping me for a part in my life. It just wasn't sustainable for me, I think. I definitely wasn't mature enough, I think, as well, in my 20s to stick at it. Maybe if I did it in my 30s, which I am now, I would be able to have the interlace and not touch it as more. I'm not sure.
And then, so how do you decide like what wigs you want to purchase and like how do you get them for listeners?
So, I well, back in 2009, I got given a place called Trenco. But when I first started wearing wigs, it's not like how they are now with, real scalp lace. The HD lace, it's not all like that. It was, very obvious with, if you know what I mean, if you can imagine, you can tell someone's got a wig on. Do you know what I mean? With the parting not looking quite natural. And then, yeah, just over the years, they seem to have really developed. There's so much online, but I did always want to go for like as real as possible natural look. And there are loads of places in the UK But again, minimum they're £800. You know, if you want a real realistic one, it's a thousand, you know, £1,500. And that's just not sustainable for me. I can't afford that. So then I was doing a bit of research and I actually get one from BGM Girl Hair. It's an American website. And it cost me £130. And it came, yeah, within a week. If I get them from the UK, they're there within 2 days. But yeah, I tend to go to the American websites now. And there are pros and cons compared to the ones that are £1,000, of course. But I think they do the job and it's fine.
During my lifetime with trichotillomania, I've noticed that like it comes in waves. Like sometimes I'll have very, very intense pulling sessions, and other times it's like, oh, it's been a few days, I haven't really touched my hair at all. Have you noticed that with your trichotillomania?
Oh, 100%. You know, I've gone months and then I start getting thoughts of like, oh my gosh, wow, this is stopped. And then it could be like a week later and I'll start touching it and I'm like, oh, but I don't know about you, I have managed to not feel so guilty. I used to get so like frustrated with myself and feel really guilty after an episode. Be like, oh my gosh, all that hard work that I've undone. And now I've really actually managed to sort of let go of that. And I think, touch wood, luckily for me, my hair, I don't know how or why, it does still grow back really thick and really healthy. So, and I probably shouldn't think like this, but I do sort of go, it'll grow back. But that does help me with the guilt of an episode. I don't know if that's the same with you, but yeah, it definitely comes in waves. I'm not very good at documenting like the way, if you know, like when I've done it, which I should really be doing a diary, because I think you can then maybe help yourself more. That is something I need to get better at.
Yeah, I've definitely let go of that guilt. And same with me. It's like right now everything grows back in. Like I said, touch wood, knock on wood. But yeah, it's just some days it's like, okay, I think no matter what I do, you know, I have all the tools in the toolbox, everything. I've tried it all, and some days it's still gonna happen. And I just can't feel bad about that. That's the nature of the beast, because if we could always stop the urges, we would never have pulled our hair out again, you know?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. And it's so hard because you can have people, you know, from the outside that really don't understand it. And you get the typical, oh, why don't you just stop sort of thing? And that can really get to you. But I think it definitely did, you know, when I was younger and even in my 20s. But yeah, like you kind of not beat yourself up about it, because at the end of the day, what's the point? Because we live with it, and that's what it is. We have to just live with it and know that it's going to come and then go again and come, like you say, nature of the beast.
Have you noticed when you're pulling? Like for me, when I first started pulling from my scalp, I pulled from the very, very top, like right above my forehead. And
Yeah.
then from when I had my first like relapse with pulling, very intense, it was behind my left ear. And that's kind of like always where I go. I like never pull out the hair from my right side of my head. Do you notice there's like certain places on your scalp that you find yourself going back to?
Oh, definitely. So I have really long hair from so the back of my head all the way down. It's really long and it can blend in with my wigs. And I tie my hair up for work, so that's amazing. I'm so glad I don't pull. So when I tie my wigs up, it looks like the hair is growing from my scalp, because it is at the back, if that makes sense. So yeah, I've never touched the back of my head. I have all over the rest of my scalp, but that. It's hard. I think it depends. You know, sometimes it's the top of my scalp, sometimes it's the sides. It all depends on, yeah, when it's happening. But I've never had any urges anywhere else on my body. And then, you know, it's so hard, because I would then wish that if I was going to have this, do it from somewhere else, because I feel like, and everyone's different, personally, I'm like, the worst place you could do it is from your scalp. And then I would beat myself up like I've been given the worst kind. You know, why couldn't it be from my eyelashes or my eyebrows? And I know someone going through that who does it with their eyelashes and eyebrows might go, well, hold on a minute, that was really difficult for me. But for me, on your head would be harder to disguise. And then I would beat myself up about the fact that I got the worst case possible. But I know that's not how it works.
That's where our mind goes. It's like, what the heck? Why can't it be anything else? Like, I didn't know at this time that nail biting was this like under the same umbrella. I just like saw people do that around me, and I'm like, why can't I do that instead of what I'm doing? Like, and I know people are in so much pain, and it's like causes bleeding and things like that. But I'm like, nobody's being mean to you, and everybody's talking trash to me all the time. Like, I wish I could bite my nails, but now I know, yeah, it's very hard for them too.
Yeah, and it is hard when you're going through it. And if you can disguise it more, and I think more normalized, that's the word, isn't it? It's nail biting is more normalized than hair pulling. It's not, it's not something anyone really talks about. I don't know if you guys use the phrase much in America, but people often say in the UK, oh, I'm gonna rip my hair out or pull my hair out, like it's to do with stress. And when I sort of opened up about it on TikTok and stuff, I thought, and then people that I know have spoken to me about it. I thought, do they literally think that I'm just there manically stress pulling out my hair? Like, I just don't think anyone can really ever really understand what you're going through unless they go through it. And like you say, you want to do something else. If you're going to have something, why can't it be nail biting? But they'll be going through their own struggles and wishing that they did something else. But I think it was one of your videos, and I've seen a few more about cheek biting as well. And that I was like, oh my goodness, like that's what I do. And I do it a lot. I'd be watching telly, scrolling my phone, driving. But I have thought to myself, I would much rather bite my cheeks than pull my hair.
It's so interesting now that, more people are talking about it and there's more research being done where these things that I used to do as a little kid, like I would like chew my top lip, like just like rub my teeth on my top lip. And like
Yeah.
that's a BFRB. And like when my nails would grow long when I was little, like there was like layers to my nails. I don't know if you have ever had that. And I would like peel those. Like there's all these things that like I would just do that are now known as BFRBs. And I'm like, oh wow, the signs were always there.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? Same with like going through an ADHD referral, and it's like, ah, yes, that's why I did that when I was younger and stuff. It's now there's just so much more awareness and research about everything. It and having social media, I it's really hard to go back and think, oh, what would my life be like if we had all these, TikToks and stuff when I was younger, and it would have helped so much, but I didn't, and you can't really let your mind go there because it you didn't have it and you've grown up without it and you've just had to get on with it. But now, what am I going to do about it now?
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today.
I'm going to help myself now with all these other accounts and stuff that are putting things out there and trying to support everybody. And with my cheek biting, I've become more aware of that. But I do think I touch my hair less. I feel like, I don't know if it's because I'm more aware, but I feel like I'm cheek biting more than pulling my hair. So I'll take that.
What inspired you to be more open about your BFRB on social media?
I think naturally I like posting on social media anyway. And I followed, well, some accounts with alopecia just when I was sort of looking at more different wigs and things. And I thought, wow, people are so open about hair loss. But then you sort of go, well, people get hair loss because of illnesses. People get hair loss because of alopecia. I'm doing it to myself. What are people going to say about that? They're posting it because it's something that's happened to them, which is out of their control. No one's gonna understand that trick is out of my control. So I was really battling for like the last year and a half, really, about posting. And I made a video last summer and I thought, no, I'm gonna do it. And I didn't. And then I don't know, I just went for it. I made a video and then I didn't post it for 3 weeks and I just pressed the post button and just the relief after was, yes, I just felt so much relief. It's like I'd been holding something for ages, well, years, decades inside. And yeah, I think I've just done a lot of work on myself the last sort of 4 or 5 years to have the confidence to do it. And I think some people might go, why have you posted that on social media? But I just was doing it for myself, really, for my 12-year-old self that needed this, these platforms when I was younger and didn't know what was going on. So yeah, for a bit of my own healing. And then I just kind of thought, well, if I put a post out there and everybody that I know sees it, then they just need to watch that and that's fine. I don't need to go and tell everybody, but now I've spoken about it, I can't stop talking about it.
That's exactly how I feel. Like, I will never shut up. Like, I just can't stop talking about it. I feel so good. I love meeting new people. Like, it to me, it was something I would hide, much like what you were saying before. Like, you kind of shove it to the side and you're like, yeah, I don't really want to talk about this or even think about it. But now I think about it in such a positive way and like talking about it in such a positive way. It's just, it really was life-changing to just open up for the first time and then continue to.
Yeah, definitely. And you'll be helping so many people, and that must feel good. And like I say, if there's people going through it and they're researching, they've got all this instant access, to your accounts and other people's accounts, and it's really going to help them. So it's really, I think it is important to talk about it. And I just think if there's those people in your life that don't get it and, are negative about it, then I'm strong enough now to say, well, don't need you in my life. You don't get it. That's fine. But I think that comes with growth as you get older and things.
So something that I find so interesting, and I love asking people this, is what do you do with the hair after it's pulled out?
So I rub it on my lips and fiddle with it. And that's it. I mean, I'm very curious about the roots and the hair. I used to really, when I was younger, if there was like a coarse or like a kinky hair, is that the right word? I would be like, oh, I need to, that one is really irritating me. My hair, I don't know about you, has now grown back. So I have black hair and it does grow back black, but a lot of it has grown back white or grey as well. And I would often be like, oh, I want to get those ones because they just anything that looks slightly different or feels slightly different. And then, yeah, I would rub it on my lips and fiddle with it. I feel like it was, I'm sure I read quite a long time ago that trichotillomania is almost like a fascination with the root. And I feel like that's what it is for me.
Oh yeah, I could like tell by touching the hair what kind of root it'll have. Like, you know what I mean? Like we know the details of it all. I too rub it across my lips and then I pull the root off. And then I guess within the last few years, I will like wrap the hair around my first two fingers, like my index and my middle finger, and then like break it. That's like my new next step. I don't know why I started doing that, but I just have.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know why, it's in the same families as OCD, I've read, and I don't know it why, like you say, we do certain routines. I don't feel like with OCD, I think, some people like, I've got to do certain things or something bad's going to happen. It's not like that, but it's just like a natural process that happens with it that I just do without thinking. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. Is it controlling some kind of anxiety? I don't know. That's one thing I would like to explore more.
What is your relationship with your trichotillomania now versus when you were younger?
Oh, so much better. I understand it a bit more. It's not something like, I feel like, especially coming out on, social media about it, that I feel like I'm dealing with alone. But then it's interesting because when I was younger and I didn't wear wigs or, entrelace or whatever, I went to secondary school. So that's from 12 to 18, full on with patches, really short hair, all through school. And I was really confident. And it wasn't until I started wearing wigs, and then I was like, oh my gosh, no one can see me with my hair like this. But no, as I've got older, I really don't touch it as much as I did. I think with teenage, with hormones and things like that, and in my 20s, they were still a bit imbalanced. I think I've just naturally, my hormones are balanced out more in my 30s, as well as because I've done a lot of healing on myself. I definitely think that has related to it. You know, I'm fiddling with my hair right now, but I'm not pulling it. I'm constantly fidgeting, you know, like you said about the lip biting. I do fiddle with my lips and chew my lips. You know, I'm talking to people or I'm rubbing my chin. So I'm constantly fiddling with something, but I definitely don't pull like I used to. But it's not gone completely.
What does success with trichotillomania look like to you?
For me, it would be not pulling and like my hair growing to a length where I feel comfortable not wearing wigs anymore out in public. That would be huge success for me. And I do, it does grow, and I get so excited. I've took progress pictures. I use these oils from Plant Made. It's a UK company, but oh my goodness, they are amazing for hair growth. And I would just love to continue with that and then not get to a point where it's like I've grown it and then I've started to pull in a patch. Even if it's a little patch, it's like, okay, that's got to grow again because I want to get to a point where I can not wear wigs and be comfortable all over consistently over my head. That would be success for me.
What would be your advice to listeners or to anybody who wants to be more open about their BFRB?
I think you have to learn to accept that you have this. You have to learn to accept that it's not going to go away. I think once you are at peace with knowing that there isn't a cure for this and this is you and what you have, I think then you're able to make positive steps to be able to control the urges a bit more, understand when it happens for you. I think whilst you may be in denial, if that's the right word, about it, it's harder to make those positive changes. So I do think you need to accept that this is something that you have and it may not ever go away. And know that there are so many people. I can't believe how many people there are out there that are going through the same thing. And people just want to share their stories and help people. And I think once you reach out to somebody, even if it's just one person, to make you feel like you're not alone and you're not weird, because you do think that at some point, I think you're able to then make the positive changes that you want to.
That was a huge hurdle for me, was letting go of the idea of being cured and never pulling again. You know, that was like my only goal. And then it like really didn't help my relationship with my trichotillomania. It didn't help me heal at all. It just made things like really negative. When instead it's like, okay, if this is with me forever, how can I better manage it? Like, and that was really huge, a really positive change for me.
That's it, isn't it? It's how to manage it. And, you know, I've seen some accounts and they'll say, you know, I'm pull free now. And it's great because it makes it feel like it's achievable. But you have to realize that, yeah, there's no outside cure. You have to do this yourself. And it's also okay, I think, as well. Okay, if you don't ever manage to be pull free, I think it is just. Yeah, it's something that you need to accept that it's like I said, it's you know, it's part of you and it may not go away. And yeah, it's okay if it doesn't. And who cares what anyone else thinks? That's what you've got to just adopt now, I think.